listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Rye the Movie Guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we try to act even more like ourselves as we cover our top five favorite performances by actors playing themselves in movies.
Yeah, I was going to say I play myself in the movie of my life, but you just totally ruined it for me. Months of preparation for this episode, down the toilet.
What does it matter? That's a terrible movie anyways.
Come on, it's Oscar nominated.
Jaw and a half at best. We are doing this because a new movie coming out that we want to call attention to, we're going eye for an eye on it, is entitled The Congress. It stars Robin Wright, who plays herself in
the
movie.
Is it about the theater here in Chicago, the Congress Theater? I've seen a lot of really great bands there.
In fact, that Congress Theater is closed now. Isn't it a shame?
It is. So is this movie about the Congress Theater?
Nope. No. Not at all.
Okay.
But we will get to it, what it is about, in our Eye for an Eye segment. And like I say, she's playing herself, and there's a lot of great performances by actors who play themselves in movies, a lot of times in cameos, but a lot of times in much larger roles as well.
Yeah.
We also have a couple of great guests joining us. They came on the Jaw, boy, I'm guessing 3 years ago.
No. Has it been that long?
It's close to two, I think, at least.
All right, we're going to find out.
Early days.
We are going to find out. Clint and Jared from Elka Hollywood are going to be joining us again.
Sweet.
And we have both been on their shows.
Separately, yes. And together.
It's going to be a blast. They are got to be 150, I'm guessing, episodes in the can. We'll talk to them in a minute here.
Okay.
Plus, in addition to all that, Matt, we have theater reviews. Brand new movie coming out this weekend, If I Stay. And also a movie I want to call attention to on video on demand, a documentary entitled Mistaken for Strangers.
Sounds like the story of my life. Matt Kay, the movie part two.
Also, in honor of Sin City 2, we will be playing, I should say, yourself versus Clint and Jared in Sin City movie trivia.
Yeah. It's the royal we.
It has a very large cast, so get thinking in your head, Matt.
Okay.
And you know, Clint and Jared do this awesome podcast about alcohol and about movies and movies and alcohol, and they play a drinking game every week. And
it's called Cinema Jaw?
It's a lot of fun. And while they were here, I thought, you know, I'd really want to bring attention to them about how I feel the most famous drink in movie history right around now is the White Russian from
The Big Lebowski. You're saying that's the most famous drink in movie history?
Yeah.
What about Bond's Martini, man?
No.
Shaken, not stirred.
Not even close. Are you
kidding
me?
You're out of your damn mind.
Cinema War. Oh, boy. Can't wait to see what the Elka Hollywood guys have to say about that.
Yeah, I think that they are good judges for this one.
I agree. They're experts on it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Boy, oh, boy. So it is a jam-packed Jaw, as always, Jawheads.
Do we ever not have a jam-packed Jaw?
We don't. It's impossible.
I know.
So without further ado, we bring in our guests. Clint and Jared host a podcast here in Chicago called Elka Hollywood. They have done about 150-plus episodes. Clint, Jared, welcome back to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, hello.
Yeah, thanks for having us back on.
All right, and one thing we didn't do last week, we had two guests on, and this bothered me listening back. Say who you are and your name so when people are listening, they know which one's talking.
Yes, absolutely. The fast-talking, kind of stammery one is Clint.
And the smooth-talking Lothario is Jared.
I liked it. Good one.
Now, me and Matt just crossed over 200 episodes, and on that 200th episode, we talked a little bit about how we got together and came up with the idea of the podcast. So I guess let's start there. How did you guys already know each other before you started the podcast, and who came up with the brilliant idea of Elka Hollywood?
Well, we've known each other since college. Holy crap. I just realized next week, I think we'll have known each other for 10 years.
Yeah.
So college was only 10 years ago, guys. Thanks for making us feel old.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And we moved to Chicago about 4 years ago together just to hang out with like a couple of other fellow alums from our college. And whenever we would hang out, we would.
Is that why
movies.
We moved here? Wait.
Yes, that's okay. That's why all we right. moved here. Yeah, it's,
You know, my friends are moving up there, so I'm just gonna find my own way, Dad. Later.
Anyway, we would always watch movies, and we would come up with drinking games for it, and we decided we should make something of that. At least like have something to show for it. So we at first it was going to be a web series, but then we decided on a podcast, and so
I think podcast might be a little easier to produce.
And plus, you know, because we were thinking of a video web series, but that would involve making a lot of gags and a lot more like production
and combing your hair and stuff.
Showering. Who does that?
Like, unlike the podcast we're doing now, for a video thing, we would all have to be wearing pants.
Yes, exactly. Whereas that there's no such restrictions. I feel very free right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Good, good.
You, like guys, to foster you guys that. Look great with no pants on sitting on the couch there.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Although
but
this is going to be a problem later because this is a leather couch.
Yeah,
it's gonna get,
we're going to have to get you some assistance.
It's going to get adhesive real fast.
Yikes. But yeah, we decided to start that, and about 3 years hence, we've been going.
It's awesome, too, because here on Cinema Jaw, we do a wide variety of movies a lot of times, you know. Mm. But your podcast actually concentrates on one movie that you guys actually view that night. And then make a drink around. Is this correct?
Yes.
Is this the best way to describe it to the Jawheads?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we just take a new movie every week, new or old, good or bad, and we will talk about it in depth, usually with a guest. You guys have both been on, again, together and separately, and we will make a drinking game for it. And Jared here is a mixologist also, and he will create a movie-themed cocktail for it.
Yeah.
Yes. And we've actually done Big Lebowski together.
That was a movie we all did. Yeah. That was great.
Now, speaking of these awesome mixed drinks and creative cocktails that you're making, do you got some off the top of your head that are some of your favorite ones that you've created, Jared?
You know, here's the thing about the cocktails is that I make them once for the episode and then never again.
Which is a shame because a lot of them are delicious, at least the ones I've tried.
Yeah, they're all really delicious, but I'm not actually selling them at a bar, you know, so I only have to make them the one time for the photograph for the episode. So I write them down, but I don't commit them to memory. Like, we literally just got done recording our episode for Dune. And I can remember the cocktail I came up with
spice,
for that.
Right?
Yeah, it was definitely. It started off with spiced rum, and then on top of that, I put some orange liqueur, apple butter, apricot nectar, and cream, and then just some more cinnamon and nutmeg on top.
More spices.
More spices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Indeed.
And you know what? I threw a cherry on there too, just for color.
And how Why not?
Yeah, it's not super complicated.
How did it turn out taste wise? Pretty good.
Oh yeah, very. It was autumnal, is what it was. It was like, man, I can't wait for October. This is gonna be so good when I drink it in October. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, it's still like 85 degrees outside. Milk was a bad choice.
Give it time. Yeah, in terms of the one, in terms of what I'm thinking of, the one I always come back to is the undrinkable Molly Brown, which is the one we did for Titanic, which was a simple sort of blue curacao martini, but I love the way we presented it, where we made a conical iceberg by like surrounding the martini glass in saran wrap, putting water in it and freezing it, and that when you turn that upside down and take it off, it makes this conical ice like iceberg that you put upside down in the martini glass, and it floats in this blue liquid. And, you know, A, it's fun, really fun to look at, and B,
did that
also,
actually work?
It works. It works in that it makes it undrinkable because it's really difficult to drink, but it makes for a great picture.
You really like that that persimmon one I made for Dolphin.
Dolphin
the
tail?
Dolphin movie. Yeah, oh. Dolphin Tale.
We've done a lot of dolphin movies. You get more specific.
You guys just bringing that up, I actually just caught the trailer for Dolphin Tale 2.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Oh, wow. Are we in for a treat when this thing comes out? This thing looks ridiculous. I can't believe they made a sequel to that movie.
Right.
I mean, how many sequels did they make to Free Willy, though?
Well, too many. One. I mean, just one of those.
No,
is
I think
many.
There were at least three Free Willys.
Yeah. Well, because it's another true story of some struggling dolphin.
Wait, was
that
Free Willy
freed.
Was Free Willy based on a true story? I don't think it was.
I don't think so.
No. But this is so it's not the same dolphin in the sequel.
Yeah, it's a different dolphin. It's a different story, but it's still the same thing.
I see.
Of the same cast of characters going to take care of this new dolphin with a new problem.
Because you know what? I always really thought that Dolphin Tale should be called Winter's Tale, because that's the name of the dolphin is Winter, and then also it's a cultural reference, you know. And you can be clever like that. But now I see they called it Dolphin Tale to leave it open for sequels.
Yeah.
Starring not Winter the Dolphin.
It's a whole franchise.
I do think Winter is in the sequel. But it concentrates on this new dolphin, Hope, that they're going to pair with Winter. Oh, I don't know.
Winter's
Why are we
like,
talking about
I
like, this?
Yeah, I was wondering, what the hell are we talking
I
about
feel like
here?
Winter's
no. Now I want to pitch Dolphin Tale, too.
Yeah, right.
Winter is like the older, wiser dolphin
that
advises the new dolphin that's coming in.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, but maybe we'll be over on Alka Hollywood's couch. Dolphin Tale 2.
Speaking of Alka Hollywood's couch, I don't know if you thought I'd let this go by, but we have to talk about the legendary episode that Rye the Movie Guy committed to tape. And I think the word I used was for schnickered. I mean, you got tanked, dude. You want to say a little something before we turn it over to these guys?
All right. Number one, I think they have changed their policies now. They do make sure that their guests have served, had a meal and or they serve food to
because
the guests.
Of you. They changed their policy. Yeah. Because
they asked them to take a cab there and take a cab home nowadays. You know, this all changed after my appearance, Matthew.
Yeah.
But no, you know, I went over there. I, with all intentions to have a good time, but I hadn't had dinner, and I was drinking, I believe, something we straight.
You insisted on whiskey and water, basically.
Yeah,
and,
there was no water. You said, give me some whiskey, put some bitters in it.
Yeah. That's right.
That was all you wanted.
And that was the start of it, and I felt great during
the
movie.
That was
the
end of it, right?
Yeah, that was gravity, yeah.
Yeah, I felt great during the movie and the recording of the podcast, and that's about all I remember of it. Yeah.
Something happened about halfway through where you turned into Foster Brooks. Like, I will put this right out there. You're the most adorable drunk. It's great.
He is pretty adorable. Right. You guys you've yet to see him three sheets to the wind when he starts doing his William Wallace impersonation.
Yes. We should have had you on for the Patriot.
Yes.
Oh, dude, it's actually pretty epic.
Yeah.
I have a video that I keep threatening to put on YouTube.
Please, man. Let's switch the subject.
If you meet a Patreon goal, you should do it.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Oh, we've not been using Patreon lately.
But that's a shame.
We're getting way off topic.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
All right. So for the Jawheads that want to check out, I think one of the interesting things is when you go to the website, you can find the podcast there also, but you can find the drink recipes as well, correct?
Right. And we're in the process of kind of revamping the episodes and drink recipes thing. At some point, I'm going to be putting up a PDF that I made a long time ago of the first 100 recipes. Like, it's going to kind of be in an ebook format that you can just download.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that'll be fun.
So for the jawheads listening to this that don't listen to Alka Hollywood, where's the best place to find you guys online?
We are on alkahollywood.com. It's alcohollywood.com. We're also on facebook.com/alkahollywoodpodcast and at alkahollywood on Twitter. And we're on instagram.com/alkahollywood. I also have a Letterboxd account to follow. Like, I'll just write down whatever the movie I watch. And
Let's not forget iTunes.
Yes, yeah. Subscribe to us there because we are a podcast, and Stitcher, et cetera. And we also have a book, also just a wrap up of our film writing for the year of 2013, Alka Hollywood, Our Year in Movies 2013. You can buy that at Amazon or Barnes and Noble or Lulu. We're selling stuff now.
And since you guys are our guests and you are drinking our cocktail of choice here on Cinema Jaw, if you could please judge our cocktail, which is a Tallboy PBR. Mm.
24 ounce.
Judge it.
Delicious. Mm. Efficient, I think, is a best good way to put it.
Thirst quenching. Yeah. I like this because I was actually legitimately thirsty. So
yeah.
This is,
yeah. Yeah. Mm. Same here.
Jared,
yeah.
Can you do that in your Bane voice? Jared does a great Bane impersonation.
No. Well... No. Yes, I enjoy Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes.
I think it sounds almost more like Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island.
Keep in mind, listeners, Jared has not seen The Dark Knight Rises.
My Bane impression is all based on other people's Bane impressions.
That's all. That's it. No more Bane for the rest of the episode.
Be careful what you wish for.
All right, so definitely, Jawheads, check out Alka Hollywood. Great guys, as you can tell.
Yeah.
They are going to be sticking around this entire Cinema Jaw. They have their top five favorite actors performance as themselves in movies. It's going to be a fun list, I think.
I can't wait to get to it.
All right. Well, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Taft Food Masters.
Tell me more.
Okay, Taft Food Masters just came out with a new vegetarian gyro, and I know, right? My stomach is grumbling here. Demand it at your local Whole Foods. It's great for vegetarians or carnivores just looking for a healthier option. Taft Veggie Gyros are fully cooked, pan heat in 60 seconds, high in protein, low in calories, and have zero cholesterol, rye. And hey, guess what? They're vegan and kosher, too. Get out there, get yourself to the local Whole Foods, and demand Taft Vegetarian Gyros, or call 212-664-1974 for samples. And we thank them for their support.
Eye for an Eye this week met the Congress. Actress Robin Wright, playing a version of herself, decides to take her final job, preserving her digital likeness for a future Hollywood. Through a deal brokered by her loyal, longtime agent, her alias will be controlled by the studio and will star in any film they want with no restrictions. 20 years later, Wright's digital double rises to immortal stardom. With her contract expiring, she is invited to take part in the Congress convention as she makes her comeback straight into the world of future fantasy cinema. The film stars Robin Wright, Harvey Keitel, and John Hamm. The film is directed by Ari Folman, who gave us the creative animated film Waltz with Bashir. Matt, interested or ignore on the Congress?
I got to say, very interested. That's a really interesting original idea. You don't see much of that these days, so... Big interested.
We throw it over to Jared, interested or ignore on the Congress.
Well, when Simone came out, I thought that sounded interesting, and it turned out to not be that great. So I'm going to have to ignore this one because it sounds so much like Simone.
No, it doesn't.
Digital actress wins awards. It's the same f***ing story.
Wow.
Yeah. No, Simone was more like Her, and Her was freaking amazing.
All right.
We throw it over to Clint, interested or ignore.
Well, seeing as I hadn't actually heard this until tonight, I'll say I'm interested. I find it very interesting. I find it fascinating that Robin Wright is the actress to choose for this because her career at the specific point is experiencing a resurgence with House of Cards.
Right.
Like, if you did this about, like, 4 years ago or so, like, we believe, like, oh, this feels like a stunt. But yeah, the concept sounds very interesting. I've heard good things about the director and the works they've done previously. I haven't seen them, but I'm very interested. So yeah, I want to check it out.
I'm very interested as well. This actually screened at the Chicago Film Critics Film Festival, and I missed it. I think it was because we were recording The Jaw the night that it screened. And I have seen Waltz with Bashir, and it's excellent. I love the director. It's a very creative idea. Got to be interested on this one.
Come on, Jared. What's wrong with you, man?
I don't know. I just
take
get
chance.
On board.
Three interested, one ignore for the Congress. It is opening up in limited release.
Just one quick
in one
question.
Week.
Mm-hmm. Quick question. So when you say with no restrictions, does that mean they can put her in topless?
Hey, you got to see the movie, right?
Okay, interesting. I mean that alone is worth exploring. I'm being serious. I mean that's an interesting debacle an actress could find herself in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, imagine if she didn't, consent to the work or whatever it would be. It doesn't have to even be nudity. I mean, it would be just a weird concept that she would be opposed to, but she already signed off the digital rights. That's interesting.
Or something she was politically opposed to. That's a really cool idea.
It is. And we're getting so close to that, you know? I mean, it's almost, the future of that is almost here already. So
I think we're pretty
crazy.
Much there, yeah.
It's neat. So three interesteds. It's called The Congress Jawheads. Definitely seek it out when it comes to your town. Matt, it brings us to a new movie in theaters entitled If I Stay.
You know how when you meet someone and they just already are the person they're meant to be? That was Adam. Nobody outside Portland had ever heard of his band, but he already was somebody. Me, not so much.
She shouldn't be scared to hang out with those guys. They're us.
Exactly. Adam's here.
Kids, be careful out there. Here it gets pretty wild. It's symphony.
Why do I have this feeling you're about to mess up my entire life?
You can't hide in that rehearsal room forever. It's too late. I see you.
Isn't it amazing how life is one thing and then in an instant it becomes something else? Like here I am, Mia, the girl who thinks about the cello and Adam, and just like that.
Whew, Matt, this is one heavy-handed teen drama. Chloe Grace Moretz stars as Mia, a gifted high school student who lives to play the cello. However, her life takes a turn when Adam, the cool rock star in the making student, takes an interest in her. A few months ago, Matt, all she loved was her cello. But now, she loves Adam just as much.
Aww.
This is only the backdrop. The story turns on its head when Mia and her family are involved in a car accident. Her mother, father, and brother are all in critical condition, and Mia is in a coma and has an out-of-body experience. She follows along with the medical crew as they bring her body into the hospital, but no one can hear her or see her. From here, we are treated to a series of flashbacks that show her and Adam's relationship up to the point of the accident. Should she just let go and fade off, or should she fight to live on? Oh, the drama.
Aww.
I mentioned this was heavy-handed, and there were more than a few scenes I had trouble not rolling my eyes. At one point, Matt, a nurse is talking to her unconscious body and spells it out for the audience. "It's up to you now," she says. "You can give up and die, or you can fight to survive. It's all up to you." The film, Matt, also suffers in the scenes where Adam and his band are becoming famous. Not sure anyone believed this element of the movie, including the actor playing Adam. There were a couple of redeeming qualities, just a couple, such as Mia's parents. I love that they were portrayed as hippies in a sense, but not in the traditional way. Their relationship with their kids was handled really well. And in fact, the best scene of the entire movie is actually sort of a minor scene, is where Mia's mom and dad are listening to her play the cello behind a closed door. This is the moment that her dad realizes that she has a special talent and a passion for music. For a seasoned moviegoer as myself and some of the jawheads out there, there is not much to like here, but I'm sure the crowd that this was made for are going to love it. I'm sorry for the 17-year-olds listening to this, but Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 1.5 Jaws.
You know, I was going to give you crap, too, at the end of that one, saying it's probably just not made for you. You know, I mean, this is obviously like the kind of movie that the 13 to 17 year old girls go and see 5 times in the theater.
I agree. And, you know, I saw this at a screening just last night. And like I mentioned in the review, I had trouble not rolling my eyes at a couple points. That said, I came out of the theater and there were multiple girls with tears still in their eyes, and they're all hugging each other and talking about the movie outside of the theater. I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's just teenage girls either. That sounds like exactly the kind of movie that my mom would love.
Yeah, it seems to me, because I've seen the trailers for it as well, and it very much feels like it's piggybacking off of the kind of, you know, emotive tragedy that The Fault in Our Stars did, with a little bit of, like, What Dreams May Come mixed in there. And I like Chloe Grace Moretz as an actress. I just wish she would take more chances.
Yeah, and I don't know if this was the best role for her to take right now at the point in her career, but she held it pretty much together. I think early on when you see her, it's a little bit tough for her to believe that she's actually this celloist that is being maybe able to go to Juilliard. I mean, I find that very hard to believe, you know what I mean?
What type of role would you like to see her take at this point in her career?
I don't know. I'd probably like to see more of like a family drama where she might not necessarily be the lead right now, but maybe like a good size like daughter role inside drama.
I was thinking Kick-Ass 3 for me.
She's making a career of taking those sort of chances by doing that and doing the remake of Carrie, for better or worse. So she's, you know, doing those kinds of weird roles, and I guess If I Stay is a more mundane role, but maybe if that doesn't work for her, she should stick to her strengths.
I do want to mention also there are some pretty good musical sequences. Obviously, her boyfriend Adam is this rock star in the making, and he's getting ready to open up for the Shins, and so they go to the shows, and he's got some fun songs that he plays.
Do the Shins play themselves in the movie?
They don't. They don't.
Bummer.
We actually don't get to see them, but there is one sequence in this where they play the Smashing Pumpkins song, Today.
I believe it's
entitled Today.
Yeah.
It's the greatest day, you know, so on and forth. And it's wonderful, and they're all sitting around a campfire. But again, it's just so heavy-handed because, of course, it's led into when Mia says, to think back to what the greatest day of my life is, and it goes to the scene, and now they're singing the song. It just pours it right on top of you, you know.
They couldn't get the rights to SpongeBob's Best Day Ever, huh?
Yeah.
That would have been better.
Yeah, by all accounts, it sounds very trite and over the top and kind of overly sentimental. Yeah.
So 1.5 Jaws for If I Stay. There is another movie. It was called to my attention, actually, by a couple of critic friends. It is entitled Mistaken for Strangers, and it is out on video on demand right now. And Matt, I love great documentaries, and I love the band The National. This movie satisfies both desires. The National are an indie band from Cincinnati, Ohio. The lead singer and frontman of the band is Matt Berninger. His younger brother of 9 years, Tom, decides to make a documentary when the band sets out for its biggest tour to date. The amazing dynamic this film hits on is the struggle siblings of famous performers go through when not reaching the same level of success. Matt and Tom could not be more different, and their differences conjure up some hilarious moments on screen. The film is not just funny, but touching as well, as you see the brothers come together. If you're a fan of rockumentaries, this one is a must. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws for Mistaken for Strangers.
Sounds like a good one.
It's
on VOD, huh?
It's on VOD.
Nice.
And it's funny, I listen to Howard Stern a lot of times, and when he's interviewing guests, he just had Jeff Bridges on, so it comes to mind. He loves to know the dynamic of him being so much more successful than Bo Bridges, and Bo Bridges being older to him, and what is that like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this movie, Mistaken for Strangers, really has that. I mean, it opens up with his younger brother. Imagine your older brother of 9 years is this rock star, and you're still living at home with your parents, and it's like, it would be a weird thing. And then he decides, hey, I'm going to make this documentary. And in a way, it's funny. But
rides his coattails.
Piggybacking
on his
fame. But in a way, starts to find his own voice, and maybe he can be a you know, documentary filmmaker. So
I've already forgotten his name.
So. I'm much more interested in the idea of whether or not Jeff Bridges makes fun of Bo Bridges for doing Stargate SG-1.
Now, the National...
That is one obscure fact.
Yes.
Now, the National are playing themselves in the movie, but I stipulated to Matt, because Jawheads, if you've already listened to episode 202, there was a debacle on the top five vehicle list.
What debacle would that be?
Matt doesn't know what a vehicle is.
No, so. Apparently you don't know what a vehicle is.
Well, we're still going to heads on this, but button heads, I tell you. But
yeah.
I stress to Matt, this wasn't meant to be, it's a documentary where they're playing themselves. I think we all got the point.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If it's a documentary, technically they're not playing anything. Yeah,
right. Yeah, they're right. Themselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think I had to.
What about a mockumentary? Yes.
Well, if it's a mockumentary, then there's a layer of fiction, and I think that would be okay.
Yeah, I agree. Right, yeah. I also. I
and I was asking before we recorded, but decided to save it. What about one of those documentaries where we're not sure? Like Exit Through the Gift Shop?
Ooh.
We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that's part of the Banksy. Complex gift of film.
Banksy playing himself, my number one, ladies and gentlemen. Spoiled it.
Yeah. All right. Actually, Jared is getting a start at this week.
Okay.
What do you got sitting at number five, actors playing themselves in movies?
My number five is Winter the Dolphin. From the film Dolphin Tale.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a real dolphin. It's her story, and she's basically reenacting her own life story. And she was much younger when the events happened, but you can't tell that she's older now because she's a dolphin. So.
I may not know what a vehicle is,
yeah.
But Jared doesn't know what an actor is.
Now I'm going to have my 20-second rant is going to be aimed at Jared this week.
I've earned it.
Oh, yeah. Earned it.
At least we got that out of the way fast.
Yeah.
Right.
Does anybody else have animals, mammals on their list? Anything such as that?
I mean, people are mammals. But
yeah.
What about manimal?
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All
right.
There will be no more aquatic...
Mine are all mammals. I'm sorry.
No more aquatic mammals on my list of actors.
All right. So we swing it over. Yeah. We swing it over to Clint. What do you got sitting at number five?
Okay. I'll go ahead and say Sam Jones in Ted. The guy who played Flash Gordon in the original 80s movie.
Nice.
You know, as divisive as Seth MacFarlane can often be as a comedian and a writer-director, I liked a lot of parts of Ted, and especially the open-faced enthusiasm they had for Sam Jones, the original wooden actor who played Flash Gordon in the original, and they bring him back. Yeah, and they bring him back, and they have Mark Wahlberg's character like meet him at a party, and they have this whole drug trip sequence or whatever where he's hanging out with him on like the hover bike, and it's great, and there's such a wonderful joy and enthusiasm, and you can tell he really has a sense of humor about his experience, although because we've done Flash Gordon on the podcast before, he didn't have that great an experience. You know, he quit the film halfway through, and like they voiced over his, you know, voice.
I love when the guests bring one up that I didn't think of during my research, and yeah. I love the pick because I love that movie. It was hilarious, and especially, yeah, his cameo in the movie is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Great pick.
Agreed.
I'll swing it over to my number five, and at number five, I actually just mentioned him, that I'm a fan of his. He's more of a performer, but he played himself in the movie that came out in 1997 entitled Private Parts. I'm speaking of Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Also my number five.
Really?
Yes.
Nice. Wow, very seldom do we think alike.
You're usually
not up on my level. Howard Stern, Robin Quivers also plays herself, and it tells the story of Stern's rise to the biggest radio personality in the history of the medium. Great early role in the film also by Paul Giamatti,
yes.
Who plays Pig Vomit.
Pig Vomit.
And WNBC.
Yeah, that scene is amazing.
Oh, it's so fantastic. And the whole movie is great. And if you're a Howard Stern fan, he still talks about the making of the movie and... You know, when he had his nude scenes or was in the bathtub, he was fully erect.
Of course.
Good to know.
Hey, that's from Howard's mouth.
Nice. I don't believe it.
All nice right. Bit of movie trivia.
Yeah, that was your number five as well.
That you
got anything else to comment about it?
No. I mean, it's a great movie beginning to end, and no, I think we hit the high points. Yeah.
For sure.
Swing it around.
All right.
Okay.
Jared, back over to you. What do you
all
got
right,
sitting
Megan,
at number four?
My number four, I have...
Is it another porpoise?
No. dolphin, actually. It's not the same as a porpoise.
Okay.
It's not a dolphin or a porpoise. It's Michael Jordan in Space Jam.
I like it. Good pick.
Also based on his life story.
Indeed.
It starts out that way. Like he's a kid and they're teaching him how to play basketball. And then it skips forward like to when he's a professional... basketball player. It skips over when he had that, you know, murder in his family, but that's can you imagine that in Space Jam if that had come
it would have been a whole different
yeah.
movie. It would have been more of a drama.
Yeah, would have been more of trying to get that back rather than to save the universe from alien basketball players that are stealing.
Was it Marvin Martian or something, the villain?
No, it was the villains. They were called the Monstars, And they're
I see what you did there.
No, right. I didn't do it.
Yeah, no, I know. I see what they did.
They were called the Monstars, and they were stealing the talent from human basketball players for a reason.
Okay, not the player themselves, but the talent. They would reach and take it.
Mm-hmm. They would just suck the talent out of them. Yeah. Yeah.
This sounds like something out of the Marvel universe, Matt, that you're so into.
No, come on.
It's not that much of a far stretch, I don't think.
Actually, it is. You know why? Because DC owns the Looney Tunes characters.
Oh, that's why. That's why. I thought maybe one of these Martians had one of those gravity gloves. Or what's this thing called that the guy is collecting the...
The Infinity Gauntlet. And just like on every Marvel film, you will eat those words. I want to, you know what? I'm going to insert this right here and go back to when we did Eye for an Eye on Guardians of the Galaxy. And you were like, this is a total piece of crap. I'm not going to waste my time. And here we are. It's the film of the summer. Sorry, Jared. I didn't mean to.
Yeah. Tough crowd. What? Tough crowd.
I like that pick.
Yeah. Nice pick. It was a nice pick. It was a nice pick. We swing it over to Clint. What do you got sitting at number four?
Okay. I'll go ahead. This is actually much higher in my list, but I'm going to say it now anyway, just because Arnold Schwarzenegger in Last Action Hero.
Nice.
Because he plays a fictionalized version of himself for the vast majority of the film, but in the last act of the film, he comes over to the real world and he gets to confront himself. And he gets to play this awkward sort of self-aggrandizing version of himself where his wife keeps badgering him not to keep pushing Planet Hollywood. And it's really charming. I love the movie. I feel like it was sort of unfairly kind of judged. I mean, it was probably in the middle of like Arnold fatigue when it first came out. But
it was probably his last movie.
It was his last like big movie. Yeah. After that, he did like a bunch of smaller stuff before going into politics. But it was a nice self-reflexive look at both him and kind of Shane Black era buddy cop movies. And I think it's really smart. I rewatched it recently. Charles Dance, who has a lot of cred right now for Game of Thrones, is in it as the villain. He's amazing.
Yeah.
And he gets to confront Arnold. He gets to kind of just call Arnold out on all these like really weird expectations that people have of him. And I just thought it was really fun.
I have to admit, I've never seen this movie.
Oh, you should.
You really should.
Yeah, it's absolutely a worthwhile view. Was he also the villain in Golden Child?
I think he was, yeah.
I just put that together. Just made that connection. I like him. He's a great actor.
Do you know who it is? Throw it in the jaw box.
No. He just said the actor's name.
Yeah, Charles Dance. Sorry. Yeah, Charles Dance. He was also the Doctor in Alien 3.
Oh, there you go.
And he's the Lannister King.
So. Game of Thrones. That's where he's getting his cred now. And he's going to be old Dracula in the new Dracula movie.
What do you think of that? I don't know.
I hope they get to team together with I, Frankenstein and form a horrible rat king of Universal Monsters.
And then the Monster Squad comes back.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right.
It's
all right.
A nard kicking.
We move on. Over to my number four. And at number four, I have a movie that came out in 2009. I think when we went Eye for an Eye, Matt was over the top interested. I said ignore. Yet, I own the movie now, so I did eat my words on this one. I'm speaking of the movie Zombieland. And my favorite part in the entire movie, by far, is Bill Murray's cameo as Bill Murray.
For me, he was the only enjoyable part of that movie. Like, I loved his performance and, like, literally nothing else about the film.
That's a shame. So.
You stole my number one.
Wow.
You sunk my battleship.
Dang, number one. Wow.
I tell you what, it's a fantastic cameo. And I love the movie as... whole way through, but that part by far is my favorite, and especially the when he's playing the zombie to freak them out and what happens to him. I don't even have to spoil it. He ends up
through doing my research. I discovered this is not the first time Bill Murray has played himself, and maybe it'll come up on somebody else's list. So I don't want to spoil it. But if it doesn't, that's a little trivia tidbit for you.
All right,
he was in Space Jam, but he didn't play himself. I don't think.
No, I think he did because he's like one of the golf buddies.
What, really?
Yeah, I'm almost positive he did.
It was Space Jam. No,
all right.
Yeah. All right, that was my number four, Bill Murray in Zombieland. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
I have a feeling we're going to cross over a lot because, you know, I mean, I went for a bunch that weren't cameos, and obviously we discussed not doing documentaries. So at number four, I have the epically bizarre performance by Neil Patrick Harris in the Harold and Kumar films.
Yeah, the thing that brought him back to relevance, honestly.
Did it? Was it that?
I mean, think it was.
Dr.
I
Horrible.
I think it was also.
Dr. Yeah. Horrible sing-along blog.
But I think that was the thing that turned Neil Patrick Harris into a meme.
It definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. We can agree there.
He was the Chuck Norris for a while.
You're probably right. Because, he was the one riding unicorns and everything like that. Have you seen this film?
No.
I noticed you're sitting there quiet over there. You've got to see the Harold and Kumar. I don't smoke weed. I haven't since I was a teenager. And I still got a lot of enjoyment out of these movies.
The first one, at the very least, is very charming.
Yeah, and I also like the Christmas one. I have not seen Guantanamo Bay, but I've seen the first one. I saw the Christmas one, and I laughed at both. I thought they were both hysterical.
Surprisingly smart.
Yeah.
While being stupid at the same time.
And, yeah, exactly. And Neil Patrick Harris being probably the best part of the movies. I mean, the highlight, really going to laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I understand that the joke is that they mythologize him so much. Like, they give him, like, powers or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah pretty much.
I can get behind that.
nice pick there, Matt. We are into our threes, and as we get to our number threes, it should be mentioned we have a sponsor of the top five this week. The top five CinemaJaw this week is sponsored by
Card Recovery Pro.
Tell me more.
Card Recovery Pro is an easy-to-use card recovery software, and actually this comes in handy for podcasters. This software can effectively recover deleted, lost photos, music, video, and multimedia from almost all digital cards after disasters like deletion, corruption, or formatting errors. Using Card Recovery Pro is safe, risk-free. The software performs read-only operations on your memory card. It doesn't move, delete, or modify the data to avoid causing further damage. It recovers, like I said, photos, all kinds of stuff, Ryan. And you can find out more at their website. It's cardrecoverypro.com. And they have a 60-day guarantee, money-back guarantee.
Awesome.
I'm telling you.
Definitely check it out, Jawheads. We are into our threes. Jared, what do you got sitting there?
Bill Murray in Space Jam.
Really?
No, that probably doesn't count. No, for number three, I'm going to go with The Beatles. In A Hard Day's Night, because none of the other movies they did were even remotely good.
Yeah, I was gonna
say. And believe me, I have seen them all.
We've done Magical Mystery Tour on the podcast.
Don't watch it.
Yellow Submarine, the animation?
They weren't really part of that.
Well, they had voice actors doing the Beatles throughout the whole animated part of it.
No
and then
kidding.
The real Beatles came in at the very end. Like, they weren't even planning on doing that. They just thought of Yellow Submarine as a quick way to fulfill their contract, their movie contract. They owed the studio so many movies. They're like, well, how about instead of us doing it, why don't we just use our likenesses in a cartoon? Would that count? And they're like, fine. But then they actually ended up liking the cartoons. They're like, oh, we'll come in at the end and we'll do a bit. It'll be great.
It's kind of like Jackie Chan Adventures.
Yeah.
Now, exactly. Now in all the Beatles movies, because I haven't seen them all, do they always play themselves or sometimes are they characters?
No, they're just always
the
themselves.
Beatles.
Yeah,
they are. Okay.
Well, I mean, they'll go off and like Magical Mystery Tour, for example, is a little bit weirder. So for the most of the movie, John is just John. But then occasionally he'll be a wizard living in the sky or something like that. But for the most part, I think
he was like that in real life, too.
A wizard living in the sky? Yes.
Yeah, pretty sure at least sometimes.
Yeah.
Yoko! but A Hard Day's Night is probably the best one.
Yeah, because Help is pretty terrible, too. I mean, when you make a movie where Ringo Starr fights a tiger and it's not cool, you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
There you go.
Amen, brother.
Yeah.
That is true.
I haven't seen really... Maybe I've seen one Beatles movie. That's it.
I think I've seen the animated film, and that's
You guys should definitely watch A Hard Day's Night.
Nice.
Yeah. Yellow Submarine is the most fun, but again, that's not actually them in the movie.
Here's a big confession here on CinemaJaw. Mm-hmm. Ready, guys? This is going to get me some hate mail.
Uh-oh.
Not a Beatles fan.
Whoa.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
We could have been friends.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Could have been.
Yes. We can connect on other things, Jared.
No,
that's it.
It starts
with the Beatles. And
yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
He's walking away now.
He's just left the couch. We swing it over to Clint. Clint, what do you got sitting at number three?
All right, I'll go ahead and give a fairly recent entry. And there was a movie I rather liked last year. This Is the End, which was the Seth Rogen, James Franco, Jonah Hill and crew apocalyptic comedy. It was that along with The World's End were like the two comedy gangs, kind of apocalypse things. And I was surprised to learn that I liked This Is the End just slightly better, just because they were able to poke fun at themselves so effortlessly and also create some genuine laughs with all the apocalypse stuff and the exorcism of Jonah Hill, like pulling Rosemary's Baby references out of nowhere. And it's a great spiritual sequel to Superbad, too, because Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who wrote that, also wrote and directed This Is the End, and it becomes this weird microcosm for like the way they relate to each other and their friendships in these different stages of life, which is super cool. It's a really funny movie. Everyone parodies themselves perfectly. I really enjoyed it.
I still got to catch up with it.
I have to admit, the Cinema Jaw guys have both not seen this movie.
Oh, you're missing out.
Everybody tells me how good it is. I think it's on Netflix now, I believe.
I'm not sure.
I don't think
it's definitely in the Redbox for
you
sure.
You should check it out, though.
It's most definitely in Redbox.
All right. Nice pick at number three. At number three, I have sort of a relatively new movie, also came out in 2009. Stars Jason Segel and Paul Rudd. It is entitled I Love You, Man. And I'm speaking of Lou Ferrigno in I Love You, Man.
Okay. All right.
And what's hilarious is, you know, I think this all started really, my honest opinion, with Mike Tyson's cameo in...
Whoa. This might be on someone's list.
All right. I'm just saying. Okay. Mike Tyson's cameo in...
Hangover. Yeah.
Ever since then, when you bring up Flash Gordon or I bring up Lou Ferrigno, it always seems like that was such a hit to have this like sort of odd character out of place that, they went to Mike Tyson's house and they stole a tiger.
Yeah.
And same with Lou Ferrigno. Paul Rudd is this, you know, real estate agent, and he's selling a house, and he's selling Lou Ferrigno's house. And, of course, he then becomes part of the story. So Lou Ferrigno's in there. He ends up standing up to his wedding. He has a hearing problem. And I mean, it's just hilarious because it is Lou Ferrigno. You're laughing because where the hell did they pull Lou Ferrigno out of? You know what I mean?
Right.
This guy had time.
He was at Comic-Con down the street.
This guy had time
hard to find.
To get away from his Comic-Con signings to make a movie. But that's what is part of the fun is they pull these guys, these obscure characters out and put them in their movies. And Lou Ferrigno, it worked perfectly, and I love you, man.
I agree with that pick, but I would disagree that The Hangover got the whole extended cameo thing started because the Muppets have been doing it for years, decades.
Yeah. They kind of cornered the market there.
Indeed. At number three, guess what? Mike Tyson, The Hangover.
Now I know why you were so sensitive about it.
Such a legendary cameo. I mean, Mike Tyson, we hadn't really thought about him, but you're in Vegas, you're having a crazy, drunken, roofie-fueled night. Where else are you going to end up but stealing Mike Tyson's tiger? And I thought he was great. I mean, honestly, he could have really blown that movie, which had been good up to that point.
Uh-huh.
And then Mike Tyson could easily have
it could have felt gimmicky, but it wasn't.
Well, I mean, I think the real risk was letting Mike Tyson act.
Yeah. To be fair, I think you could argue he still didn't act, but he was still very charismatic.
Well, he was natural in the scene.
Yeah, and I can't ever unhear that drum solo without seeing him bang the drums on that Phil Collins song.
He was funny. I liked it, and he became part of the mythos. I believe he returned for the second one.
Yep.
So
yeah, I think so.
He did. And I still have not seen the third.
The third is worse with his absence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's saying something.
Yeah. He was like, no, I'm not going to do this one. I'm out. Sorry, God.
I'm Tyke Mithen, baby Bakta.
I right now, I give Matt's Mike Tyson over Jared's Bane.
Oh, no. Sure. Yeah, no. No hurt feelings over here.
All right. We are into our twos. Jared, what do you got sitting there?
God, what was the name of that movie where Robert De Niro was like a cop? But he had to play like a TV cop.
Half his filmography.
No, I think I know what you're talking about. Showtime?
Yes, Showtime.
You're welcome.
It was Robert De Niro.
I haven't seen it.
Robert De Niro and
Eddie Murphy.
And William Shatner has a cameo in it.
Yes.
Where he has to come in and teach them how to act like cops. And
well,
so
because he was TJ Hooker? I mean,
yeah, sure. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the joke. He comes in and he does this whole monologue about his method for playing TJ Hooker. And he just goes into the routine where he like dips his pinky into the bag of cocaine and he tastes it to see if it's cocaine and it's cocaine. And then Robert De Niro is like, what if it was poison and you just tasted it? What would you do then? And then he just darts off. No, I love when William Shatner is willing to make fun of himself because everybody else is doing it. So I'm glad that he's finally joined in the fun.
He gets it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He finally got it, and to the point where it does. I mean, everything that I see him in, he is sort of making fun of himself nowadays.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, I feel like it was like around the time that he won an Emmy that he was able to just relax and let the insults roll off his back.
I figured that came in with the Priceline money.
No, that too.
Yeah.
I'm sure that didn't hurt. But no, he's an Emmy award-winning actor.
Yeah, man. Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Unreal. Good pick at number two. You got to love a Shatner reference on Cinema Jaw. I love
right.
it. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Right.
You just classed up the place here, Jared.
I try. Yeah.
Clint, what do you got sitting there?
All right. I think I'm going to go ahead and dip back into the action movie well with JCVD, which was the movie that Jean-Claude Van Damme did a few years ago where he played himself as a struggling, washed-up action star.
So he played himself.
Yeah, exactly. But he witnesses a bank robbery across the street, and he decides to kind of insinuate himself in it And you sort of see throughout the course of the film, it's he's doing it to also, you know, bring himself back to fame. And there's this wonderful scene in it. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend checking it out. It's kind of like weirdly Fellini-esque, where he just walks away from the scene at some point, just cutting off the scene, and he steps back, and the scene, he like is literally lifted above the scene, and he gives this honest monologue very dramatically to the camera about him and his life and how he screwed it up with cocaine and everything. And it's very honest and raw, and he's like legitimately crying in it. Like, he's either, I mean, I don't believe he's that good an actor, so I believe it's really honest.
And then the camera pans out a little more, yeah, and you see that he's doing a split between two trucks that are moving down the highway.
I wish. But, it, like, honestly, it's a tremendous film, and it really gave me a lot of faith in him.
I have not seen this, but I've heard good things. I've read things, and I was like, wow, I wonder if it is worth checking out.
Yeah, it took me a while, but once I checked it out, I was like, oh, man. Like, just by virtue of that scene alone, it was just so ballsy that I really liked it.
Nice. Swinging over to my number two. And at number two, I had Neil Patrick Harris also. So I'm going to substitute an honorable mention. And it could be anybody's number one. And I feel bad that it's just an honorable mention of mine.
Oh, no.
But I'm speaking of John Malkovich. Malkovich.
I feel like it was both
you
of ours.
You jerk.
Yeah. We all saved it for number one.
All of our number ones.
Well, we'll talk about it when we get over to that.
Sure.
All right. Matt, what do you got sitting at number two?
You know what? I'm going to pass it around again, because at number two, I had Sam J. Jones in Ted.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Did you guys both have John Malkovich?
How could we not?
All right, let's talk about the brilliance of this movie.
All right, let's do. Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's just with the screenplay, it's such a weird and unique idea to craft this sort of weird science fantasy around this not really A-list actor. He's a good actor. Everybody knows he's a good actor, but he's not like an A-lister. So he's sort of like he's in the public consciousness, but he's not like a superstar. But still, people are clamoring to become him through this secret, you know, passageway. This
portal.
This portal. Yeah. And you get to live inside his head for a time, and then it turns into this other thing where it's these people who are looking for the secret to immortality by jumping into different people's heads. And it the fact that he stands up in that movie as just being a regular guy is very important to contrast with the rest of the craziness that's going on around him.
Yeah. And I think it's such a bizarre role for John Cusack. I mean, this is not a John Cusack movie at all.
Well, him and Cameron Diaz?
Yeah, yeah.
Cameron Diaz. They both play, like, kind of ugly people.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's the movie stars playing ugly people, and you've got this actor, John Malkovich, who's known for playing sort of, like, offbeat characters a lot of the time.
Uh-huh.
He's the one playing the straight man, which is also very unusual.
Yeah.
It shows
a
little bit more of his range.
Yeah. Catherine Keener is amazing in this film, too.
Oh, yeah.
I love her.
As Maxine, right?
Yeah. She's like sort of the villain in the film. I guess
everyone has their own complicated motivations, and it was fascinating seeing it from Malkovich's perspective, because I guess it's sort of, you know, you look at it from an actor's perspective, sort of being in a way used and abused for other people's sort of emotional gratification, and this is a more literalized version of that, which is super cool. Just for the sake of going against the grind, I had an honorable mention that I figured I'd say since everyone else is doing.
Well, hold on, I still got a number one
to
say here.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Oh well, but you stole their number ones with your honorable.
That's all right. Sorry. All right, but also I wanted to say it too. I mean, obviously, being John Malkovich was penned by Charlie Kaufman, and it's such a brilliant film. You would think you'd be able to say maybe this is his most brilliant script. But I don't think you can.
Yeah.
You think you could say
adaptation?
This might be his most creative script, but I don't think you can. The guy is a genius.
They're all great in different ways.
They're all great, and they're all creative. They're all, every one of them is brilliant. It's amazing.
I can't wait to see
what
he comes up
with next. We need
more
from this guy.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure he's made a subpar script, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, I just rewatched Adaptation and it had been on my to-do list for so long, and I thought, the thing's brilliant. You know what I mean? It's just so much fun that he came up with this idea of his twin brother inside the movie. It's just hilarious.
And didn't they give him the twin a Golden Globe or something?
Yeah, they nominated him for an Academy Award as well.
I mean, I guess the worst thing maybe he's done is Schenectady, New York. And that's
because I thought
it was overly ambitious.
Oh, I loved it.
I mean, I'm just thinking it's the least amazing of his stuff.
Yeah. You still got a number one left here, Matt?
I do.
All right. I got a number one here.
I'm subbing one in.
I love this movie. It came out in 2010, and there's a sequel coming out in about 2 weeks. It stars Steve Coogan and Rob Braden.
Yeah.
I'm speaking of The Trip.
Yeah.
Have you seen this one?
Yeah, it's a good one.
I mean, it's a very subtle comedy. I mean, not a whole lot is going to happen, but the imitations and the writing in this movie, basically, here's the premise. Coogan plays himself, and he was going to go on this trip up in northern England with his girlfriend to all these like fancy restaurants and to try everything out, but the girlfriend got a job in like New York and had to go to New York, so he brings this Rob Braden, who's an actor friend of his, so they both are playing themselves, and they end up going to these fancy restaurants, and at each restaurant, they end up doing probably what they just normally do, which is imitate other actors, from Sean Connery to Bane. No, they don't really do Bane, Jared, but they do Woody Allen, and they do all these...
There's a Michael Caine scene that's
Michael
particularly
Caine,
great.
Which is phenomenal, and then after
the
a while...
And the brandy.
Yeah. To blow the doors off. No, and Michael Caine's like this, and they keep going on and back and forth, and who does the impression better, and they're having a competition, and it's really just that. It's like two guys sitting there having a dinner, talking about other actors, and at the same time, where you were speaking about Van Damme being very serious in that scene, I think Coogan's very honest in the scenes where he's talking to his agent. He wants to get the right role. He thinks he can do more. He's not being taken serious in Hollywood. I think that's a little bit of a reflection of probably how he feels in the conversations he's having with his agent. I think it was a very honest look at his career as well.
Yeah, and another movie where Coogan and Bryden play themselves is Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, where they both are like working on this. It's a kind of a weird mockumentary of like a fictional adaptation of Tristram Shandy, and that's supposed to be very, very good as well. So it's nice to see that tradition continue.
Mm. And Jawheads, The Trip is on Netflix. I highly recommend it. And in 2 weeks, The Trip to Italy is coming out, and it's basically a sequel of these two, reprising the roles of themselves, going around Italy doing the same thing. So I love it.
Nice.
Awesome. That's my number one, The Trip. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
At number one, Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not there.
Okay.
This is not a documentary.
Right.
It is a mockumentary.
We'll let this one slide.
We famously decreed in our Cinema Jaw video. Anyway, I really like this movie. And here's why it's a noteworthy role. Because Joaquin Phoenix actually carried this beyond the film. And he did talk show appearances as this character, if you want to call it a character. And he kind of lived it. So... He really broke down the fourth wall, and to the point where most people knew it was a hoax or it was just a bit he was doing. But at some point, all of us were like, "Is this for real?" So I think it was pretty good. Yeah. That's why it's at number one.
I wish the movie turned out better than the project was, because the project was so sort of ambitious in the sense that he was going to carry this on for years. He wasn't going to do any roles, and he's going to go on David Letterman and do this ridiculous appearance, and. Yet the finished product, I don't think, lived up to that hype.
I blame it on Casey Affleck.
Yeah. It's not a movie that dates itself well, honestly, because a lot of the entertainment value comes from that mystery of, is it real? And I watched it during that sort of gray area of it just coming out, and you watch it, and I think I probably watched it like a couple days before Casey Affleck revealed that it was all a put on. And and I agree. I totally agree that it sort of hinges on that, where if you watch it with that foreknowledge, it's kind of lame.
Right.
Like, there's a scene where he's going to, like, poop on somebody or, like, teabag somebody, and that's, the climax.
He does poop on somebody.
Yeah, he poops. He successfully poops on a person.
I do love that scene where he falls off the stage when he's rapping.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good moments.
I did laugh out loud during that scene. That was hysterical.
Like, I think the issue with it is, if it was real, it would have been much more interesting than if it was just a really lame put on.
Right.
I still admire the commitment that he made to doing that, though. Like, after the first year of this shtick, I was like, oh my God, has he actually gone insane? But then here's the thing. Ultimately, it doesn't matter whether it was real or not, because how much work has he been getting since that movie?
Tons.
A lot.
Really?
Hello, yeah.
All right.
He's done the last two Paul Thomas Anderson movies. Yeah. He did The Immigrant. He's doing fine.
All right.
Yeah. Her?
Yeah. Her. Yeah, he was in that.
Fantastic. Yeah.
He's made a career out of playing mustachioed weirdos, basically.
Hey, we got time for a couple of honorable mentions. I had one, Joshua Jackson in Ocean's 11. If you guys remember, Ocean's 11 opens up, there's a card game going on, and they're trying to teach Joshua Jackson how to play cards.
Yeah, fake Brad Pitt is teaching real Joshua Jackson how to play cards.
It's such a bizarre moment in there,
Yeah, because it's a whole scene of like these smaller B-level, C-level stars with Brad Pitt playing an actual fictional character,
right,
teaching them how to play.
I don't know why I love that scene, though. It's a fun movie.
It's a charming scene.
It opens up pretty well with the film. You had another one, Clint?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go old school on your asses and say Cecil B. DeMille in Sunset Boulevard.
There you go. Oh.
Yeah. The old school movie where we have the old woman who is desperate for stardom again, and you know, later in the film she actually meets Cecil B. DeMille, and he asks her to go off the set, and it's just such a weird moment of reality, especially in Golden Age Hollywood, for a director to play himself like that and be so sort of honest and cruel.
And of course, we get that famous line, "Mr. DeVille, I'm ready for my close-up."
Exactly. And yeah, it's just a classic moment from a classic movie.
I love that film.
I got an honorable.
Oh, boy, Matt.
Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon from Back to the Beach.
Okay. You've lost the rest of us.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on. It's a great early 90s, maybe late 80s.
Early 90s?
I mean, it's pretty... It's not as old as you think. It might be late 80s, but Pee Wee Herman pops up. The band Fishbone is in here. Uh-huh. It's just exactly what it sounds like. Back to the Beach. It's a beach movie.
Of course. Like about sounds about 30 years too late for beach movies.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, they were a joke.
Right. They were washed up has-beens.
Oh, okay.
And they did this movie very late in their career. In their careers, it was very late.
Uh-huh.
It was. I don't even think it was an attempt at a comeback. It was more like just a
campy
romp.
Yeah. So. Gotcha. Interesting.
I liked it. I have a soft spot in my heart for that film.
I can do one more honorable mention since we're speaking of oceans.
Yes.
I'm going to bring up Alfred Hitchcock in Lifeboat.
Yeah.
Because it was the one movie, it all takes place on that same boat, so he couldn't make his standard, blink and you miss it cameo. But they open a magazine at one point, and there's a weight loss advertisement, and he's in both the before and after pictures. So that was the way that he figured out to put himself in his own movie.
That's great.
In that instance.
And it finally hit me. Yeah. It was Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard.
Oh,
who played
yes.
the actress.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, Jawheads, if you have Twitter pulled up, and we missed your favorite actor playing himself... herself in a movie, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Matt will be taking on Jared and Clint in Sin City movie trivia, plus a cinema war looking at what is the most classic cocktail in Hollywood history.
Oh,
we'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hey, Ryan.
Yeah?
Do you work hard to create online content?
Damn right I do.
Well, I have something very good for you. Whether it's writing, photography, music, video, a blog, a comic book, or a game, if you create original online content, then you deserve to get paid for your effort. OnScribe makes it super easy to add subscription buttons to your content using known and trusted payment services like PayPal and Google Wallet. Users can subscribe to your content without needing an OnScribe account, and you get paid immediately. OnScribe charges no additional fees or commissions on your subscriptions, and it's free to get started. What do you have to lose, Rye?
Nothing.
That's right. Visit OnScribe, and that's onscri.be today, and get the credit you deserve.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Patrick Swayze was offered a cameo role in the film Zombieland as a zombie just before his cancer diagnosis. His scene would have parodied other Swayze movies like Ghost and Dirty Dancing. Zombie cameo roles were also offered to Joe Pesci, Mark Hamill, Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Bacon, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Matthew McConaughey. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Clint and Jared of Elka Hollywood. Again, guys, you guys do this awesome podcast where you guys make cocktails, you watch movies, and then you play a drinking game along for the Jawheads who want to get involved.
You get your guests hammered.
Indeed. We try. That's our primary goal.
Yeah, but the thing is, we try to use the drinking games to generate new discussion about the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like, more like three recurring motifs, where, each rule we do is something that we can talk about. That's something that happens in the movie, happens for a reason, and generates new discussion.
One of my favorite small touches of yours is that when you guys make the cocktails while you guys are discussing the film, you guys have the microphone on. Jared, a lot of times, is making the cocktail with the ice in the glass, and you hear these like cocktails being made, and it makes it sound like it's like a real classy joint over
makes
there.
It makes it sound cool, right?
Yeah, it does. I like that touch.
And we have
too.
A nice classy theme, too, which is really nice.
We like the ice, the sound of the ice on Alcohol Hollywood. Most podcasts, you don't want any ambient sound. We're like, that's the one that we're going to allow.
We like the sound of karaoke in the front bar. Here on
indeed.
Well, last week we were out and we were on location, and Matt was able to smoke on the podcast because we were basically in a small studio, which was a garage. And Matt lit up and made sure the lighter was right on the mic. Like, make sure everybody knows he's lighting his Zippo up.
That's right.
Nice.
What a real turkey.
It's a satisfying feeling just knowing that you're being a rebel. You know,
right?
Everybody
it's
can hear
real,
you. Doing
it's a fly on the wall kind of experience.
Such a great sound, too.
But again, for the. But again, for the Jawheads who want to check out your podcast, the best place to do so?
Yes, alcohollywood.com, alcohollywood.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and iTunes and Stitcher and all those wonderful places.
Awesome. Definitely Jawheads. Check them out. They are friends of the show. Matt, it brings us to a segment called...
Cinema War.
Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week, and our guests this week, Clint and Jared, get to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads who they think won this Cinema War. And it's very important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave and rip on the other person if they choose to. Whew. Boy, Matt, I say the dude has the most classic cocktail in movie history with the White Russian. Matt here thinks James Bond's martini is the most classic drink in Hollywood history. Let the cinema war begin.
All right, Ryan, if you walk into any one of my bars, or any bar in the world for that matter, and order a White Russian past 8 p.m., the bartender is going to roll their eyes at you. They are sticky, sweet hangover juice. And while I love the dude, his cocktail of choice is suspect at best. I'll have mine shaken and not stirred.
Wow. Came out that early, shaken, not stirred.
That's
all right.
I had to get it out. All right. Let's thought, get that out of the way real quick.
I was wondering.
That's actually going to be in every one of your responses, is that phrase.
Yes. Matt, the dude versus Bond, I like this matchup. One likes to dress up in nice suits and drive swanky cars. The other likes to wear his robe and go bowling. And when it comes to their drink of choice, it's no question, Matt, the dude's White Russian is the most famous drink in movie history.
I don't know, man. The dude had his drink in one movie, and Bond has had his drink in, I think, 15 at this point.
Over and, 20.
Yeah, okay, yeah, over 20. Unless made by...
Stop siding with him, Jared. I'm just
clarifying.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
Unless made by Jackie Treehorn, the White Russian just doesn't pack as much punch as a martini. The martini is a man's drink. Just ask Don Draper. Didn't see him sipping any Caucasians. They get you messed up, and you'll look good getting there.
All right, here's the thing, though, Matt. Long before Bond ordered the martini, it was already a celebrated drink. Not so with the White Russian, a.k.a. the Caucasian. Sure, the drinking community had heard of it, but after the dude in The Big Lebowski made it his drink of choice, the whole world knew about it.
Okay, aside from keeping Kahlua in business, the White Russian is good for nothing but a laugh. Which drink would you rather have in your hand if the girl of your dreams walks into your gin joint all Casablanca-like? A crummy Caucasian or a suave, sophisticated martini?
I'll take the White Russian. Thank you very much. Matt, where the martini in the Bond movie is just a side note, the White Russian is almost a character in the film. Bond is good for, what, one martini a movie? Meanwhile, the dude put down over 20 in the Lebowski. Why? Because it's a superior drink.
No, and Bond made the martinis. The whole shake and not stirred thing is it's amazing, and it is a character. And Ryan, you'd have to be stoned and live in L.A. to put the White Russian over the vodka martini in any cocktail fight. The martini is a masculine, refined, simple, powerful classic. Dare I say, it's a beautiful cocktail. The White Russian is something a bored bartender made up in the 70s. There's just no contest here. Go turn on some Creedence and smoke up and pour another one because the dude may abide, but he picks a shitty cocktail.
Hey, that sounds fantastic. I'm on my way to do so, Matt. The best part is the dude makes his own White Russians. He does not have to tell someone shaken or not stirred. He does it himself. And sometimes all he needs is powdered milk. Even better. Doesn't stop the guy at all. You know what ties this cinema war together, Matt? a nice rug, and a cold Caucasian. Whew. Boy, oh boy, we are button heads here on Cinema War. We throw it to Jared. We throw it to Clint. What did you guys think of the Cinema War?
God, that was extremely enjoyable.
that was great.
You know, the question is, which is the more classic cocktail? Or which one is the better cocktail?
I mean,
or any way I want to interpret it.
Yeah, any way you guys want to interpret it. We hang loose here on Cinema Junkie.
Oh, okay, cool. Uh-huh. Hence the no pants. yeah, I mean, as far as...
And you guys got to work as a team here, too. It's got to be one vote. We can't split votes here.
Yeah, this cannot be a tie. Ooh. I don't drink White Russians because I just don't like sweet drinks in general. But I have to agree that nobody was drinking White Russians before The Big Lebowski came out. And then
this was
a
good point.
Everybody was drinking White Russians.
That's a good point.
People have been drinking martinis all the time. So I think, like, as far as like popularizing a drink, The Big Lebowski gets more points in that capacity.
I would absolutely have to agree. I think in terms of, you know, the martini versus the White Russian, vodka martinis were around before, you know, and so were White Russians, but there was nothing that explicitly tied such an iconic character to.
However,
yes.
That said, I mean, the way that James Bond orders his martini is very specific. Nobody ordered a martini shaken until Dr. No came out. And a lot of people will say
shouldn't.
That
really?
Well, it
right?
depends.
Yeah. You don't want to bruise the alcohol.
This is actually a big controversy in the bartender scene.
It is. Okay, so here's the thing. For a gin martini, never ever shake it. Yes, it bruises the alcohol.
Right.
It reduces the potency and the flavor of the gin, which is what you want. Now, for a vodka martini, that's different. First of all, you're not putting you might not be putting any vermouth in there at all. It's just a dash.
Right.
And so you want it to be extra, extra cold because warm vodka tastes like lighter fluid. So you want it to be cold. You want it to be shaken. You want it to have that sort of cloudy texture. That's what makes it so enjoyable. So I'm okay with James Bond sort of reducing the potency and flavor of a vodka martini, first of all, because it just goes down easier that way, and second of all, because he's a spy. He needs to keep his wits about him. Right?
True. Right.
Well, I also want to point out that it's not that he has kept the vodka martini throughout his entire run. I feel like some of the early Roger Moores, he abandoned.
Yeah, Roger Moore switched to whiskey.
Yeah, because they wanted to set Roger Moore apart from Sean Connery, especially as the decades changed. So vodka martinis were not explicitly a wholehearted part of the Bond canon the whole time he had his run.
And here's the other big thing to acknowledge. If you go to a bar and their bartender knows their mixology and you ask for a James Bond martini, they're going to say, you mean a Vesper, which is the martini that James Bond invented. So they have to clarify, do you mean that martini or the one that he orders in the movies? So in terms of being a classic cocktail, I feel like it has too much variation. You know, it's not one consistent product. A White Russian, you make at the same time, every time. The vodka martini, there are hundreds of different vodka martinis.
Well, you could put Kahlua, you could put milk, you could put cream or powdered.
All right,
powdered
so
milk.
That's
like the dude pulls
off. Sure, there's the White Russian, the Black Russian, the Mad Russian. But if you're talking just the White Russian, it's a 3-ingredient drink. You don't even have to stir it.
We made one with Chambord. I think was the Soviet Russian. What was the Soviet?
That sounds
a while back.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. We put something red in it.
Yeah.
Those were the days. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We don't do that anymore.
All right. So we need a winner here, guys. What do you guys have? You discussed. What do you got?
What do you think? White Russian?
I hate to say it.
Yeah, because it is such an iconic drink, the vodka martini. But I think in terms of explicitly linking a character with a drink,
you guys are so fucking wrong on this.
Yes!
Sorry.
Thank
you picked the wrong guest to side with you on the Cinema War. Ryland's this one.
God, if it were,
I can't believe that the freaking Caucasian beat the vodka martini.
You know what? Blame Roger Moore, as I do in all things.
I do blame Roger Moore. Go ahead, Rye.
Thank you. Hey, this one goes out to the theater owners. I've been. We went and saw Lucy. I went on a random Tuesday night, and it was a 6 o'clock showing. And I don't think the movie started until about 6:18 because of so many trailers and advertisements.
Yeah, they have a lot of those.
How about this? From now on, why is it that difficult to say what time the movie starts and what time the movie actually starts so that we know? It wouldn't even be that difficult. Just put it in parentheses on the website so that we're aware if. I'm rushing. There's a bike sharing system here in Chicago called the Divvy Bike. And I parked the Divvy Bike right at the theater. And for the first time ever, the Divvy station was full. I couldn't park at the theater.
Wow.
So I'm, oh, man, I had to look up. The next station was 5 blocks away, so I had to pedal all the way over there, park it, and then run back to the theater. I'm in full sprint at this point.
Yeah.
I get back.
I've got to see Lucy.
I'm sweating. You know, I'm just drenched in sweat. And then I sit down in the theater, and I sit down for another 12 minutes of previews.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is ridiculous at this point. You've got to start telling us when the actual movie starts. It's not that difficult.
I usually use 20 minutes as a good rule of thumb. But I have a question for you. In this run, did you use more than 10% of your legs?
Well done.
Thank you. You're welcome. I'm here all week.
Tip the waiters, try the veal.
I had a big problem with Lucy.
Oh, well, have
I haven't listened to your review yet. Is it out?
I have a written review of it, but okay. Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Awesome. All right, Sin City 2 is in theaters this weekend, Jawheads, and we, in honor of that, are playing Sin City movie trivia. It has a large cast, so I hope you guys are familiar with everybody who's in Sin City, because I'm drawing from all of them.
Ooh.
It works like this. Jared, Clint, you guys are our guests. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if one of you guys gets stuck on a question, you get one rescue. Rescue me, Ryan. I will help you out with the question.
Okay. Are we working as a team? Or
you're
separate?
Working as a team.
Okay.
You guys want to go first?
Sure. We'll go first.
Let's do it.
Question number one over to Clint and Jared. Question one is this. Eva Green starred alongside Johnny Depp and Michelle Pfeiffer in this 2012 film that was based on a TV show.
Dark Shadows.
Concur. Yeah.
Yeah.
1-0. Clint and Jared.
We're just getting started, guys.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to order
two.
Another vodka martini.
Oh, is this also for us? This is for us again.
No,
right?
This is back to Matt now.
Yeah.
Matt. Matt, this Sin City 2 actor played a young Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black 3.
Josh Brolin.
Always start off easy. We always start off easy.
Right.
Question number three over to Clint and Jared. Name the 2005 Jessica Alba movie, which also starred Paul Walker and saw the two of them play ocean divers.
Blue Crush? Was it Blue Crush? Was that that one?
Well, I think it was Into the Blue.
Oh, no. It's going to be one of those. Blue Crush or Into the Blue? I think it was Blue Crush.
Let's go with Blue Crush.
Well, Julian was just talking about last night. Blue Crush.
Oh. Was I right?
Well, Matt's got a chance for a steal here.
Okay.
Into the Blue.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We should trust my instincts.
And here's the best part. Yeah. I know for a fact Matt wouldn't have not got that. I just know you. I know him.
You're welcome. That's for the vodka martini.
Thank you, guys.
Wow. See,
you monster.
This is what happens when you have a team. They think out loud, Matt. You might have a shot
right?
here. Wow. Matt is now taking the lead 2-1. And question number four is over to Matt. Matt, Christopher Lloyd, who appears in Sin City 2, his most iconic role was in the Back to the Future series. What was his character's name? Full name, please.
Dr. Emmett Brown.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Not so fast. There's a middle initial in there.
It was fine. All we needed was first and last name.
Let's not complicate this.
You said
this.
Full name. He's Dr. Emmett L. Brown.
Wow. I never would have gotten that.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. It is now 3-1,
but
Matt
what K. does the L stand for?
Latour.
Latour. Yeah.
It's 3-1, Matt K. You guys need all these questions.
Man.
So question five over to you. Name the person from Sin City that also appeared in 7 Pounds, Unstoppable, and The Zookeeper.
Ooh.
And you do have a rescue if you need it.
Rescue me, Ryan.
Yeah.
No!
Rescue us.
Question number five, Rescue Me, Ryan. Who is the name of the actor that starred in Unstoppable, 7 Pounds, and The Zookeeper? And your clue is initials R.D. She also is in Clerks 2.
Oh, Rosario Dawson.
Was the big giveaway there. Yeah.
I would have guessed Richard Dreyfuss otherwise.
Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah. I remember his love scene with Brian O'Halloran in Clerks 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It is now 3-2. We got a ball game still here. Question six over to Matt. Matt, Joseph Gordon-Levitt played a bike messenger in this 2012 film.
Rush. Premium Rush.
That was close.
I was about to buzz you.
Yeah.
Wow. Fortitude Matt K.
I forgot it was a premium Rush.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Not just Rush.
Fortitude Matt K. And there's two questions left. You guys need them both. Question number seven over to you guys. Mickey Rourke appeared in this 2001 Sean Penn directed film that also starred Jack Nicholson, Benicio del Toro, and Patricia Clarkson, and had to do with a retired police chief trying to catch a child killer.
Ooh.
Wow.
I don't know. It's not The Wrestler.
Not The Wrestler.
It's,
Mickey Rourke, yeah. Sean Penn.
Sean Penn directed.
He directed it.
Sean Penn directed. He's not in it.
No, he's not in it. Jack Nicholson, Benicio del Toro, and Patricia Clarkson.
Wow. That's a great cast.
I should have waited. Yeah.
The Rescue Me Ryan, but I guess we would have got.
I don't have a clue.
We're lost. Sorry. We're done.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Oh. Down goes Alka Hollywood. Down goes Alka Hollywood. Question, Matt, number seven. You do have a rescue left if you want to use it.
There's the eighth question's over to me, right?
Yeah.
All right, then Rescue Me Ryan.
Oh, question number seven, Rescue Me Ryan. What was the name of that Mickey Rourke film? And your clue is, Matt, blank Allegiance to the Flag.
Pledge? Pledge Allegiance to the Flag?
We'll give them...
I pledge allegiance to the flag?
We'll give it to you. It's The Pledge. Have you guys even heard of this movie?
Oh, no, I have not.
I have. I've heard of the title.
Yes.
I had not.
I didn't know that all those other... I only knew Jack Nicholson was in it. I didn't know all those other people were in it.
All right. Matt's now up big. He is up 5-2, and the last question is over
to
him.
See that, guys? Vodka martini.
Yes.
You're welcome for Into the Blue.
Matt, here you go. Last question of the game. Bruce Willis starred with Justin Timberlake and Emile Hirsch in this 2006 film concerning the youngest person ever to be on the FBI's most wanted list.
Okay, yeah, that was actually Dr. No. Famously, Bruce Willis orders a vodka martini, shaken, not stirred. No?
Incorrect. You guys got a guess on this one?
Was that Into the Wild?
Oh.
We're looking for Alpha Dog.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen Alpha Dog.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Boy, Matt, you win this one in convincing fashion, though.
Oh, thank you.
Can we get a handshake? A virtual? Yeah. I mean, you guys are a distance. Give a wave. Psh, there you go.
Fist bumps.
As always, in case it came down to a tie, we call it a jawbreaker. This question would have been over to Jared.
Okay.
Who wins in a street fight, Bruce Willis or Mickey Rourke?
Wow. Mickey Rourke has more weight on him, but I feel like Bruce Willis is more resourceful, so I'm going to give it to Bruce.
What?
Incorrect. That would have went to Mickey Rourke.
Oh.
All right. Once he gets him in a headlock, he just can't get out of that.
Yeah.
The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Dr. Emmett Brown, Christopher Lloyd, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
Ooh.
I believe he is 74 years old.
Lock him in at 74. What do you guys got?
That's a little too old. I'm going with 67.
67. Now, if he could travel back in time, he may be 67. Or even maybe 74. But he's actually 75 years old.
Oh.
Wow. That was pretty close.
Yeah, we would have gave that to Matt.
All right.
Wow. Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
Tip of my hat, guys.
Yes.
Boy, oh boy. It brings us to the end of a great jaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
It's been super long, but it was a real blast.
You mean it's been a long time since we've been here?
Yeah.
Right. You didn't mean the podcast was too long.
Yeah. Okay.
God, I feel like I've been here forever.
Is it over already?
Please let us leave.
Not what he meant to say.
So one more time, if the folks at home want to find you guys, what's the best place for them to check out?
Yes. ALCO Hollywood. That's alcohollywood.com. Yes. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. And Facebook or Twitter. Et cetera, et cetera. We also have books, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Just search for Alka Hollywood there. We have all kinds of stuff. We always release episodes every Thursday. New movie, new or old, good or bad.
That's not distracting at all.
We always have a distracting echo whenever we say things.
Echo. Say things. Wow.
So check us out there. Cocktails, movies, drinking.
Awesome. Good job, guys. And also, I wanted to mention, too, we recorded a day early, and we still have entries coming in from the Cinema Jaw Riddle last week.
Yeah.
So look for it on Twitter and Facebook. We'll announce the winner there because I know we still got some tweets we got to go through. So it's been a fun week, Matt.
It has. Every week is a good week, right?
Isn't it? Isn't it always?
Yeah.
And we before we wrap up, you did not hear from Elias Rodriguez. There seems to be some type of phone connection.
Totally forgot. Oh, my God. So, yeah, no. right before his phone died, he texted me, and he said, my phone's about to die. He's in Zimbabwe, as a matter of fact. Yeah, so he's on his way out of Africa. He's getting on a boat, and little does he know, the boat is actually going to Antarctica. So
maybe he's going to visit Werner Herzog up there, making a documentary.
Yeah. You know, he said that it's really really hot in Africa, and he was, you know, like, I think he had Ebola or whatever the disease is going around. It's pretty bad. I know, right?
Poor Elias.
Wait a minute.
Poor Elias.
This is not good.
That's not good.
No. Yeah. So we put him on the next boat to Antarctica, and hopefully the cold will just, you know, get it right out of his system.
There you go.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
All right. I mean, even though he's not here, we want to thank Elias Rodriguez. And also, we got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to OnScribe, Taft Foodmasters, and Card Recovery Pro.
Awesome. And also, thanks to the new 400 Theaters, one of the best theaters in Chicago. They have a full liquor bar and the best prices on first-run movies. Check out what's playing at the new 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
We love those guys.
We do. Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
Then you have my permission to jaw. My permission to jaw.
See, now you're starting to sound...
Slide A or slide B, which is right.
That was...
my permission to jaw.
No, no, the last one, the one after that.
My permission to jaw.
No, no.
Good news, everyone.
You're getting gorgeous.
Good news, everyone. I have terrible news.
Terrible news.
It was a cartoon cat you had in there for a second.
A cartoon cat?
Oh, wow. Yeah. No.
No.
Or just still go back to my permission to jaw.
Now you have my permission to jaw.
No, it's Burgess Meredith. It's Burgess Meredith.
Burgess
now.
Meredith.
Yeah.
Spain.
I have my permission to jaw.
All right, I'm cutting it.